made a vain grab at the hydro spanner with his right hand as the tool slipped from the X-Wing's starboard engine cowling. His fingertips brushed the spanner's end, sending it into a spin toward the ferrocrete deck of the hangar. A half second later, when his right knee slipped and unbalanced him, he realized having failed to catch the tool was the least of his problems. He tried to hook his left hand on the edge of the open engine compartment, but he missed with that grab too, leaving him set to plummet head first in the hydrospanner's wake. Still trying to prepare himself for the agony coming from a fractured skull, he was surprised to find pain blossoming at the other end of his body. Before he could figure out what had happened, his flailing left hand caught hold of the cowling it had missed before, aborting his long fall to the ground. He hauled himself back onto the S-foil and lay there on his belly for a moment, considering himself very lucky. As the pain in Corrin's rump lessened, Whistler's scolding gained volume. Corrin rubbed a hand back over his left cheek and felt a small tear in the fabric of his flight suit, prompting him to laugh. "Yes, Whistler. I'm very lucky you were quick enough to catch me. Next time, though, can your pincer catch a little less of me and a bit more of my flight suit?" Whistler blatted a reply Corrin chose to ignore. The pilot twisted around onto his seat with only mild discomfort. "So, do I still need the tool, or did the last adjustment do it?" The droid's tone ran from high to low in a fair imitation of a sigh. "No, of course I still need it," Corrin frowned. "You should have caught it, Whistler, not me. I can climb back up here by myself. It can't." Even as he said that and slid toward the S-foil's forward edge, it occurred to him that he'd not heard the hydrospanner hit the ground. That's odd. Peering over the edge of the wing, he saw a smiling, brown-haired woman holding the hydrospanner up in his direction.
"This belongs to you, I take it?"
Cora nodded. "Yeah. Thanks." She handed it to him, then climbed up on the cart he'd used to get up on top of the S-foil.
"Need some help?"
"No, I've pretty much got it handled, despite what the droid says."
"Oh."
She extended her hand toward him.
"I'm Lou Jane Forge."
"I know. I've seen you around."
"You've done a bit more than that. You flew a dupe against me in the redemption scenario."
She leaned her slender body against the side of his fighter, bisecting the green and white wording that indicated the X-Wing was the property of the Corellian Security Force.
"You put the Korolev down."
Corrin tightened the hydrospanner over the primary trim bolt on the centrifugal debris extractor and nudged it to the left.
"That was luck. Nuwara Venn had already taken the shields down with his missiles. It was more his kill than mine. You still did well."
Her brown eyes narrowed ever so slightly.
"I guess. I have a question for you, though."
Corrin straightened up.
"Go ahead."
"The way you took that bomb after me, did you do that just as part of the exercise? Or is there something more to it?"
"Something more?"
Lou Jane hesitated, then nodded.
"I was wondering if you singled me out because I was from Kessel."
Corrin blinked in surprise.
"Why would that make any difference to me?"
She laughed and tapped the Corsec insignia on the side of the fighter with a knuckle.
"You were with Corsec. You sent people to Kessel. As far as you're concerned, everyone on Kessel is either a prisoner or a smuggler who ought to have been a prisoner. And when the prisoners and smugglers liberated the planet from the imps, well, that didn't change anything in your eyes, did it?"
Setting the hydrospanner on a safe spot, Corrin raised his hands.
Wait a minute. You're jumping to a lot of conclusions."
"Maybe. But tell me, you didn't know I was from Kessel?"
"Well, I did."
"And tell me that didn't make a difference to you."
"It didn't. Honest.
I bet.
The firm set of her jaw and the way she folded her arms across her chest told Corin she didn't believe him. There was a fair amount of anger in her words, but also some hurt. Anger he could deal with. There wasn't a smuggler or criminal who hadn't been angry when he was around. The hurt, though, that was unusual and made Corin feel uncomfortable. What makes you think I hold your coming from Kessel against you?
The way you act.
Lujane's expression softened a bit, and some of the anger drained away. But that just let more anxiety and pain bleed into her words.
You tend to keep to yourself. You're not associating with the rest of us, beyond a narrow circle of pilots you think are as sharp as you are. You're always watching and listening, evaluating and judging. Others have noticed it too.
Miss Forge, Lujane, you're making meters out of microns here.
I don't think so. I don't want to be judged for things over which I had no control.
Her chin came up, and fire sparked in her eyes.
My father volunteered to go to Kessel under an old Republic program, where he taught inmates how to move back into society upon their release. My mother was one of his students. They fell in love and remained on Kessel. They're still there, along with most of my brothers and sisters. They're all good people. And their work with inmates was designed to make your job easier by giving criminals other skills so they'd not return to crime when they were released.
Corin sighed, and his shoulders slumped.
I think that's great. I really do. I wish there were thousands of people like your parents and kin doing that sort of work. The fact is, though, that even if I'd known that, I'd still have gone after you in the exercise.
Oh, my being from Kessel had nothing to do with it.
He almost dismissed her question with a glib denial, but he caught himself, and she clearly noticed his hesitation.
Maybe, just maybe, it did have something to do with my flying. I guess I decided that if you were from Kessel and could fly, you had to be a smuggler. And it was important for me to fly better than you could.
She nodded once, but her expression did not shift from one of concern to smug triumph as he had expected it would.
I believe that, and I can understand it. Still, there's something more there, right?
Look, I'm sorry if what I did made you look bad in the exercise, but I really don't have the time to talk about this now.
No time? Or no inclination?
Whistler hooted something in an utterly carefree manner.
You stay out of this.
Frustration curled his hands into fists.
You're not gonna let this go, are you, Miss Forge?
With a smile blossoming on her face, she shook her head.
If you'd gotten this far in the interrogation, would you give up?
Corin snorted a laugh.
No.
So, explain yourself.
He definitely heard a request for more than an explanation of his conduct in the redemption scenario in her voice. For a split second, he flashed on the times at Corsec when his human partner, Ayela Wasiri, had made similar demands of him.
Ayela had been a conciliator, always the one to be patching up the disagreements between folks in the unit. That's what Lujane is trying to do. Which means I've managed to alienate a number of the other pilots trying to get into the unit.
Concerning the exercise, I really just wanted to see how good you were. I'd been able to figure out where some of the other pilots stood in relationship to me, but I'd not flown against you. You know, you're not bad.
But I'm not in a class with you and Broad Jace.
Corin smiled quickly, then covered it with a frown.
True. But you're still very sharp. I'd like to think the rest of the pilots are going to be at least that sharp. I'd even be set up to fly against that Gimbal kid in his redemption scenario tomorrow. But Jace volunteered before I could.
His name is Gavin. Gavin Darklighter.
Gavin, then.
And you didn't want to be following Jace's lead.
Would you?
Lujane smiled.
Given a choice, no. I guess not. Next to you, he's the most standoffish person in the group.
Corin felt uneasy inside.
I'm not as bad as he is. No? At least he has the good graces to deign to join us in downtime for some recreation. He's a sliced and blown data file compared to you.
Corin turned to the left and pointed his finger at the astromech droid.
Don't even start.
Lu Jane raised an eyebrow.
So your droid thinks you should get out more too?
Something halfway between a snarl and a growl came from Corin's throat, but it lacked the power to make it menacing.
Whistler has the ability from time to time to be a nag.
His problem is that in the time since I left Corsec, I've been in situations where I've had to be very careful. I moved through a number of identities that didn't allow me to be very open with people. For example, most recently I spent over a year as the confidential aide to a succession of incompetent imp officials governing a rim world. One slip, one crack in my identity, and I'd have been caught. And when you get out of the habit of trusting folks and relaxing around them, well, I understand. Thanks. Corin gave her a grateful smile.
On top of that, I'm learning a lot of new things here, and I've been trying to concentrate on my flying. That's not easy. There's a whole new set of slang to get used to, and people from species I barely knew existed that I now have to work with and even share living quarters with.
That is difficult. My roommate is a Rodian.
That's rough. But I'll bet she's less idiosyncratic than my roommate.
Corin whistled at the Gand pilot entering the hangar.
Oral! Come over here, please!
The pilot's gray-green flesh clashed with the bright orange of his flight suit, and the knobby bits of his exoskeleton poked bumps in odd places from beneath the fabric as he walked.
May Oral assist?
I've been curious about something since we were assigned the same quarters, but didn't think to ask you about it until right now.
Corin frowned.
I hope you don't mind. You might take it personally, and I don't mean to embarrass you.
The Gand just watched him with multifaceted eyes.
Quark would hope to avoid embarrassment as well, but you may ask.
Corin nodded in what he hoped was a friendly manner.
Why do you speak of yourself in the third person?
Quark is embarrassed by not understanding your question.
Lu Jane smiled.
You do not seem to refer to yourself with the pronoun I, and you alternate the names you use.
The Gan's mouthparts clicked open in what Corin had decided was a Gan's best approximation of a human smile.
Oral understands.
And?
Oral crossed his arms, then tapped his trio of fingers against his body's deltoid armor plates.
Gand, it is held that names are important. Any Gand who has achieved nothing is called Gand. Before Oral was given Oral's name, Oral was known as Gand. Once Oral had made a mark in the world, Oral was given the Quark surname. Later, by mastering the difficulties of astro navigation and flight, Oral earned the right to be called Oral.
The woman frowned.
This still does not explain why you do not use pronouns to refer to yourself.
Quark apologizes. On Gand, only those who have achieved great things are permitted to use pronouns for self-designation. The use of such carries with it the presumption that all who hear this speech will know who the speaker is. And this assumption is only true in the case where the speaker is so great, the speaker's name is known to all.
Corin found the system curious, but somehow satisfying. It always does seem that those who use I the most are the ones who have the least in the way of accomplishments to justify it. The Gans have formalized a system we should have come up with long ago.
So, oral is the equivalent of corn? And quirk is the same as horn for me?
Exactly.
Then why do you sometimes refer to yourself by your family name and sometimes by your own name?
The Gand looked down for a moment, and his mouth parts closed.
When a Gand has given offense or is ashamed of actions, this diminishes the gains made in life. Name reduction is an act of contrition, an apology. Oral would like to think Oral will not often be called Quirk, but Quirk knows the likelihood of this is slender.
Whistler tootled jauntily at Corin.
People would know my first name was Corin even if we did use this system.
He rolled his eyes.
And any droid who wanted to keep his name would have run this little diagnostic program and told me if the extractor was adjusted correctly or not by now.
Lujane glanced over at him.
Trouble with the engine?
Nothing major.
Corin pointed down into the hole.
I had to replace an extractor a while back, and keeping it trimmed up over the first 50 parsecs is important.
Lujane nodded.
Until it seats itself properly. Looks like you're working on the housing when you really ought to be just putting a spacer on the axle. You know about fixing these things?
She shrugged.
Land speeder repair was one of the trade skills my father used to teach. The T-47 uses virtually identical debris extraction systems for the engine. What you're doing will work, but you'll keep making adjustments for another 6 months. I can measure up a spacer and have it ground down to size for you in half an hour or so.
Really?
Sure. If you want the help.
Corin frowned.
Why wouldn't I?
You'd owe me a favor, and you'd have to trust me.
Trusting someone he did not know did feel odd to him, but not so much so that he could not do it.
I see your point. I think, though, I can trust you.
We have a deal, then.
Oral looked up at Lujane.
You will need a spacer and laser calipers. Oral will obtain them, if you wish.
Please.
Corin leaned back on the S-foil.
I appreciate this help.
She smiled slyly.
I hope you think that after you hear what my favor is.
Name it.
After we fix up your X-Wing, you come with me to downtime and get to know some of the others who are likely to make it into the squadron. We've all got the thing pretty well figured out. Gavin's a wild card, but Broad Jace thinks he will probably knock him from the running. A few of us are at the lower edge of what we assume will be acceptable scores, but we hope to make it. Anyway, we congregate down there, swap stories, and get to know each other. Since you'll undoubtedly be in, you should join us.
Corin nodded.
Okay, I'll do that. But that's not the favor I owe you.
If that's the way you want it.
Definitely.
Corin smiled at her.
I owe you for more than just helping me with the engine. Asking me to become friends with folks I should already be getting to know isn't a favor I'd be doing you, but one I'll be doing myself. One thing, though. I'm not going to have to get along with Broad Jace, am I?
Why should you be the first?
Good.
As Oral returned with the part and the tool, Corin winked at Lujane.
Well, let's get this engine working. Then we can see if there's a way to fix up my relations with the rest of Rogue Squadron.
5. Corin Horn tried to kill his smile as he entered the white briefing amphitheater. Then he saw all the other pilots who could smile were absolutely beaming.
not a one of the nervous expressions we were all wearing the other night in downtime.
The first message in the queue on his datapad had informed him that after breakfast, he was to report for Rogue Squadron's first briefing. The message itself had been neutral and routine in wording, even though it was the first official notification that he'd made it into the squadron. He'd had a pretty good idea that he'd make it, but despite assurances from the other candidates, he'd never allowed himself to assume he would make it. In the past, he'd been burned by making unwarranted assumptions. Granted, those assumptions had eventually led him to join the rebellion, which was not a wholly bad thing, but it took him well away from where he had imagined he'd be at this time in his life. Even though he'd not allowed himself the luxury of believing he'd make the cut before he actually made it, he was proud of his being selected for the squadron. Corrin had never been one to hold back. He'd gone into the Corellian Security Force Academy straight out of secondary school, and continued the Horn family tradition by establishing new records in the training there. One of the last marks he surpassed had been set by his father, Hal, 20 years earlier, and Hal had beaten the record set by Hal's own father.
"And now, I'm a rebel, an outlaw. What would my father and grandfather have thought?"
A cold sensation raised goosebumps on his skin.
"Whatever. They would have thought much worse things if I'd become an imp."
Rosati Ener waved Corrin over to the bench where she sat.
"We made it! We actually made it! It was nice of Commander Antilles to agree with our group consensus."
He mounted the steps up to Rosati's row and slid in next to her.
"It hasn't sunk in yet in some ways."
The Gand, sitting behind them, leaned forward.
"Or I'll learn your redemption run had the highest score of our training cycle."
Corrin flashed the Gand a big smile. He'd found exaggerating his expression did indeed help Oral catch its import.
"Who came in second? Bror Jace, I bet."
The Gand shook his head.
"Gavin Darklighter beat the Fifaran."
"The kid beat Jace?"
Corrin glanced over at where the tall, brown-haired pilot from Tatooine sat talking with the black-furred Shistavon and Wolfman, Sheel. Corrin, with years of experience in the spaceports and stations on Corellia, had spotted Gavin as being young despite his size.
"It's in the eyes. The ears just aren't there, but apparently the piloting skill is."
The Twi'lek sat down next to Oral, looping one of his brain tails back over his left shoulder.
"Jace isn't any happier about it than he was about losing to you. He volunteered to fly in an eyeball in Gavin's exercise and got hit with a missile at range. He never had a chance."
Corrin nodded his head and looked up toward the front of the room where Bror Jace stood. Tall, slender, and handsome, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed pilot had proven himself to be very good during the selection exercises. The Corellian thought he might even have liked Jace, but the man's ego was as big as an Imperial Star Destroyer, and likely to be just as deadly. The ego cases Corrin had known in Corsac had always burned bright, but burned out early. At some point, they got themselves into a situation they could have just as easily avoided had they been thinking clearly. Corrin smiled in Jace's direction, and caught a return nod from the black-haired woman to whom Jace was speaking.
"Oral, how did Arisi Delera do in the exercise?"
"Middle of the hunt, after Noara Venn and ahead of Oro. Lucane Forge came in at the back of the group, with the others in between. The scores were still very good, but competition is stiff here."
Wedge Antilles entered the room and marched down front to where the holographic briefing display grew from the floor like a mechanical mushroom. Joining him at the front of the room, Corrin saw the mystery pilot from the day before and a black 3PO droid with a non-standard head. It looked more like the clamshell design seen on flight controller droids, where the concave upper disc overlapped the lower one, but left a facial hole. The unusual construction made sense, both given the lack of spare parts for droids and the fact that this droid was assigned to a fighter squadron. The little bit of a sagittal crest on its head made it look somewhat martial.
People, if you would be seated. I'm Wedge Antilles, the commander of Rogue Squadron.
The green-eyed man smiled openly.
I'd like to welcome you here and congratulate you on being chosen for Rogue Squadron. I want to go over with you the basic criteria we used in making our selections and let you know what will be expected of you as your training continues and missions are assigned to us.
Wedge looked out at his audience, and Corrin felt a bit of a shock run through him as their eyes met.
His eyes have seen the ears. Have seen more than they should have.
Corrin knew of Wedge's background, because Hal Horn had been one of the investigators trailing the pirates who had killed Wedge's family at Gus Tretta. Hal had kept his eye on Wedge, and had pronounced him a lost cause when he started smuggling weapons for the rebellion. Wedge exhaled slowly.
You all know the history of this squadron. Even before we were formally created, we were given the job of killing the first Death Star. We did it, and lost a lot of fine pilots in the process. All of them were and are heroes of the rebellion. They'll be as famous as some of the old Jedi Knights in the years to come. Rogue Squadron saw a lot of action guarding convoys and raiding Imperial shipping after that. We covered the evacuation from Hoth, fought at Gaul, and a year later, at Endor, we killed another Death Star. From there we went to Bakura and fought the Sirukh. After 7 years of non-stop fighting, the leadership of the New Republic decided to rebuild and revitalize this unit. This was a wise choice, because all of us, those who had survived, had seen a lot of new pilots come into Rogue Squadron and get killed in Rogue Squadron.
Wedge looked over at the mystery pilot.
All of the veterans wanted to see Rogue Squadron continue, but also wanted to see the pilots in it get the training they needed to survive.
The TIE pilot nodded in agreement with Wedge's statement. Wedge looked back at the new pilots.
About a year ago, Admiral Akbar, at the behest of the Provisional Council, presented me with the plans for reforming Rogue Squadron. Rogue Squadron had become a symbol for the Alliance. It needed to live up to its legend and become once again an elite group of pilots who could be called upon to do the sort of impossible jobs Rogue Squadron has always managed to complete. As you know, we've interviewed and tested a lot of pilots, nearly 100 for each of the dozen positions you now fill. The reason I mention all this to you is so that you'll be aware of something that might not have sunk in during your selection process. You are elite pilots, and you are more than just that. But no matter who you are, or how good you are, you'll never be considered as good as Biggs Darklighter, or Jack Porkins, or anyone else who has died in service to Rogue Squadron. They are legends. This unit is a legend, and none of us are ever going to be able to be more than they are. Except for someone like you, Commander, who already is more.
A grin blossomed on Corrin's face.
And I can dream, can't I?
Wedge opened his hands.
Truth be told, most of you are already better pilots than a lot of the men and women who have died in this unit. You are an eclectic bunch. Two of you had death marks against you before you joined the Alliance, and the rest of you will earn them as soon as the Empire learns who has been assigned to this unit. You were chosen for your flying skill and for other skills you possess, because Admiral Akbar wants this unit to be more than just a fighter squadron. He wants us to be able to operate independently if necessary, and perform operations that would normally require a much larger group of individuals.
Rosati leaned over to Corrin.
Baron Administrator Calrissian had his own group of commando pilots back home. The ideas got merit, even if they couldn't stop Darth Vader from causing trouble.
Corrin nodded.
Corsac had its own tactical response team. Wanting to make Rogue Squadron into something similar explains why some of us made it when others didn't.
Corin still wondered what special skills Gavin was going to bring to the group, but he was willing to wait for an answer instead of assuming there wasn't one. The commander continued his briefing.
Over the next month, you'll get the most intensive training you've ever had. Captain Selchu will be in charge of it. For those of you who do not know him, Captain Selchu graduated from the Imperial Naval Academy and served as a TIE pilot. He left Imperial service after his homeworld of Alderaan was destroyed. He joined the squadron shortly thereafter and participated in everything from the evacuation of Hoth to the Death Star run at Endor and more. He is a superior pilot, as some of you have already learned. And what he will teach you will keep you safe from the best pilots the Empire can throw at us.
Wedge nodded toward the droid.
M-Tray is our military protocol droid. He will deal with all requisitions, duty assignments, and other administrative duties. You will be moving to a separate complex here to continue your training. M-Tray has your room assignments and initial craft assignments, and will give them to you at the end of this meeting. So you're all now part of Rogue Squadron. What you can expect of the future is this. Endless amounts of boredom and routine, punctuated by moments of sheer terror. As good as you are, statistical studies of fighter pilots indicate most of you will die in your first five missions. While survivability goes up after that, the odds are still not good that you will live to see the complete destruction of the Empire. The reason for that is that you will be there to see bits and pieces of it being lopped off. Rogue Squadron will be given tough assignments and will be expected to complete them, specifically because we are the best there is.
Wedge rested his hands on his hips.
That's it for now. Unless you have any questions.
Jace stood.
Will our training consist of more simulator work? Or will we be given actual X-Wings to fly?
That's a fair question. M-Tray has informed me that our squadron has been assigned a dozen X-Wings. We have possession of 10 at this time, with 2 more expected inside the week. When those ships arrive, we'll start training in them. Until then, and as a supplement to flight training, we will use a lot more simulator exercises.
The commander smiled.
And yes, we could have been assigned A-Wing or B-Wing craft, but we're using X-Wings. You may debate the merits of the various ships among yourselves, but Rogue Squadron has always been primarily an X-Wing squadron, and shall remain so. Any other questions? No? Then you're dismissed until 0800 hours tomorrow, at which time we'll meet again and begin molding you into a true fighting unit.
Corin stood, intending to head down to thank the commander for picking him for the squadron. But Jace approached Wedge first, and Corin refused to do anything that gave the impression he was following Jace.
Later. I can thank him later.
Nawara Venn stroked his chin with his left hand.
So, two of us are already under death marks. I wonder who.
Rasati poked him in the ribs with her elbow.
You mean you aren't, Nawara? You were a lawyer, after all.
Yes, and there are doubtlessly some of my clients still on Kessel who would love to kill me, but I'm not aware of having a death mark.
His red eyes narrowed.
The Shistavonin is a rough customer. I could see him being wanted by the Empire.
The blonde woman frowned.
I'd taken his being one of them for granted. What about Andorni Hui? She's a Rodian, and most of them tend to work with the Empire. Did she do something to anger her old employers?
Oral blinked his big compound eyes.
Not her. Rodians are hunters who live and die by their reputations. Andorni is a huntress who decided that joining the most celebrated hunting band in the galaxy, Rogue Squadron, is a way of furthering her reputation. Oral does not think she did anything to bring the wrath of her past patrons down on her head.
Rosati looked over at Corrin.
What do you think?
Me? I don't know. I don't think I ever ran into her when I was in Corsac. But I have trouble telling one Rhodian from another, and I can't speak their language. I do know she wasn't on any apprehension lists I ever saw, so she didn't have a death mark before I left the service.
He shrugged.
Shield probably does have a death mark on him, on the other hand. A lot of the Wolfmen were put out of the scouting business because of the Emperor's restrictions on exploration. Some of them turned around and sold their services to the Rebellion, and found havens like Dantooine and Yavin. I don't think the Empire appreciates that sort of activity.
More correctly, Mr. Horn, Riff Shield earned his death mark when he slew a stormtrooper team that tried to apprehend him, thinking he was Lak Shivrak.
The Black Protocol droid carefully ascended the stairs.
Forgive me for interrupting, and please allow me to introduce myself. I am M-Trey, Human-Cyborg Relations and Regulations with a military speciality. I am fluent in over 6 million languages and familiar with an equivalent number of current and historical military doctrines, regulations, honor codes, and protocols.
The ends of the Twi'lek's brain tails twitched.
As well as being familiar with the personnel files of everyone in the squadron? Why, yes.
Golden lights glowed deep in the dark hollow of the droid's face.
My primary function requires me to carry such data around with me. Without it, I...
Nawara held a hand up.
So you could tell us who the other individual is with a death mark on him or her? I could.
M-Tray's head canted at an angle.
Shiel has made no attempt to conceal his death mark, but the other person has said nothing about it. Would revealing his identity be wise, Mr. Horn?
Corrin shrugged.
I stopped being a law enforcement officer a bit ago, so I don't know if revealing that information would be a violation of the law. Counselor Venn might.
The Twi'lek half-closed his eyes.
Hardly. Death marks imposed by the Empire are meant to be a matter of public record, and in this company, it is hardly a disgrace.
Who is it? Rosati asked.
Nuara's right. It's more a badge of honor here than anything else.
Corrin crossed his arms.
Come on, M-Trey. Say what you know.
The droid looked at Corrin carefully.
Are you sure, sir?
Why ask me?
Of course.
Very well.
The droid righted its head again.
The other death mark was issued after the brutal murder and vivisection of a half-dozen people.
Corrin's blood ran cold.
Who did that?
The droid's eyes burned bright.
You did, sir. You're wanted on Drol, in the Corellian sector, for the murder of 6 smugglers.
Six? Laughing so hard he had to hold his stomach, Corrin sat down abruptly. He only partially landed on the bench and ended up on the floor at M-Tray's feet.
That's nothing.
He swiped his hands at the tears streaming down his face.
I'd forgotten all about it.
The Gand looked down at him.
Loro was not aware murder was seen as mirthful.
Nawara Venn folded his arms.
It isn't.
About the time Rosati stepped back, imposing M-Trey between herself and him, Corrin realized he'd quickly destroyed what his previous socializing had accomplished. He scrambled to his feet and composed himself.
I can explain this. I really can.
The Twi'lek lawyer twitched a brain tail at him.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, well, this is the truth. Unlike what your clients were probably saying.
Corrin looked at the droid.
Can you tap into the registry files from here?
I am fully capable of a whole host of functions in that regard.
Good. See if you can pull up the death files for the names in the reports about the murders, and then match them up with birth bites.
As the droid's eye lights started to flicker, Corrin turned back to his squadron mates.
The short form is this. At Corsec, in my division, we had an Imperial liaison officer who had enough ambition to dream about being a Grand Moff, and just enough talent for dealing with regs and bureaucracy to be a severe problem. He wanted us to bear down on all rebel smuggling in the system, but we were more concerned about hunting down the kind of pirates who actually hurt folks, glitz smugglers and the like. Lure, that was the intelligence officer's name, threatened to bring us up on charges of aiding the rebellion. The Imperials fleeing to Corellia after the Emperor's death gave the Diktat a lot of support, and that meant Imperial officers suddenly had the muscle to back up their threats. My boss, Gilbastra, decided to make up new identities for himself, my partner Ayala Wasiri, her husband Derek, and myself. But he knew Lure would be suspicious of time we all spent together outside the office. Gil and I made up the records for these smugglers, put hints out that they existed and were very bad, and then put out reports that they'd been murdered. Lure saw all the reports, and reading them was the closest he ever got to a field investigation. In a staged scene in the office, Gil accused me of having executed the smugglers, and I said I hadn't, and that he couldn't prove it anyway. We had a public falling out, and Lure assumed we never met with each other after that. We did, and set things up so we could head out and away from the Empire. Corrin sighed. Lure and I did not get along at all. He threatened me with a death mark for those deaths if I ever got out of line. When I took off, when he set me up and failed to kill me, he followed through. That's where the death mark comes from.
The Twi'lek opened his hands and looked at the droid.
Do you have the records, M'Trey?
I do. They have birth bites.
Gil did good work. Convert the time of their births to military time. Reverse values for minutes and hours, then compare that to the birth date of the next person in alphabetical order. Using BASIC, of course.
The droid tilted his head to the right.
There is a progression. The birth time of one is the month and day of the birth of the next. But the pattern does not loop all the way around.
It does if you add in my birthday and birth time.
Corrin smiled.
On top of that, the hospital where they were born doesn't exist. Nor does the town where it's supposed to be.
Rosati emerged from behind the droid and patted Corrin on the shoulder.
I'm happy to know you're innocent. But couldn't you have found something aside from death to use to fool your imp?
Well, when you're in Corsec, you see enough death that you have to joke about it, or it grinds you down. Besides, watching Lure read the fictional reports and react to them was funny.
Then he would find Gilbastra's death file amusing, I take it.
Corrin's jaw dropped open. What?
The droid's head became level.
There is a notice of Gilbastra's death. It came when I asked for the data on all the names with the report.
That can't be.
Oh, I'm afraid it is, sir.
M'Trey's head tilted to the left.
It was appended to Imperial Holonet transmission number A34920121.
The pilot shook his head, wishing he didn't feel so hollow inside.
Gil? Dead?
No. I don't believe it. Gil can't be dead.
The Twi'lek eased Corrin down onto the bench.
How reliable is the report of his death?
The droid's eyes flickered for a moment.
Answering that question could compromise intelligence gathering operations.
What difference does it make, Nuwara?
Corrin rubbed his hands over his face.
It was reliable enough to be put out on the holonet.
Nuwara smiled carefully, though the sight of his sharp peg teeth carried with it a hint of menace.
No, Corrin. The report of a death went out on the holonet. That says nothing about the reliability of the information upon which the report was based. That report could have been based on something your guild did, or even something this Lore did to get at you.
He's right. You must have been one grand lawyer to spot that sort of inconsistency.
The Twi'lek slapped Corrin on the shoulder.
You would have hated me if you were trying to make a case against one of my clients, whether he was lying about his innocence or not. So, M'Trey, how reliable is this report? Are there other reports that corroborate it?
I have no related reports.
It wouldn't make any difference if you did. At least not any that came out of Corellian Security Force files. Gil had full access to the database. The same way he created new identities for my partner, her husband, himself, and me, he would have entered everything to make it look good. He really went all out. We had temporary identities that let us travel to the worlds where he had created solid identities we could hide behind. At my last destination, he had me working as an aide for the local military prefect.
Rosati gave Corrin a hard stare with her hazel eyes.
So, are you saying you aren't Corrin Horn?
No, I am Corrin Horn. I used the identities Gil made for me when I ran and hid, but I joined the Rebellion as myself.
Corrin took a deep breath and sighed heavily.
Look, what I've told you about myself is true, but I haven't told you everything. It's not that I haven't trusted you, but a lot of it I didn't want to talk about.
The blonde woman reached out and squeezed his shoulder.
Hey, we all have bad memories.
Thanks, Riss.
Corrin's chest felt tight, but as he spoke, he could feel some of the tension ease.
There was a lot of bad blood between Lore and me, and knowing I was going to head out, I really started defying him. He decided to have me dealt with. On what I thought would be my last assignment, I drew an X-Wing from the pool of craft we'd captured and converted it to Corsec use. I was supposed to pull a surprise inspection on small-time smugglers who were coming in system. Whistler and I mounted up. The R2 had served as my partner in the field and had all the new identity files Gil had made up for me. Unbeknownst to Lore, Whistler had also already computed a number of jumps from Corellia since I had planned to take him with me when I left. Where the smugglers were supposed to be, I found debris and two flights of ties looking for trouble. I illuminated a couple with my lasers, then jumped out. That's the start of a long story about how and why I'm here now.
M'Trey looked down at him, his eyes glowing like stars in his black face.
Sir, do you have copies of the identity files for Mr. Bostra and the others?
Nope. Gil was the only person with a complete set, and I'm sure he destroyed them. I've only got mine, and they're stored in Whistler's memory.
Perhaps, sir, if you could provide me with your files, I can search our databases and see if I can locate other files that were similarly sliced, thereby determining if Mr. Bostra's new identity is known to us.
Or else is the wisdom of this.
Corrin smiled over his shoulder at the Gand.
So do I. I don't see how it can hurt.
Sir, if you will permit me then, I will make inquiries of your R2 unit and try to solve this mystery.
Corrin nodded.
Do what you need to do.
Yes, sir. Which reminds me...
The droid passed each of the pilots a narrow piece of plastic with an embedded black magnetic strip on the back.
These are your room assignments. Mr. Horn and Mr. Quirk will continue to be billeted together. Mr. Fenn, you will room with Mr. Chase. And Mistress Ina will share a room with Mistress Delaret.
The Corellian looked back at the Gand.
At least I know you don't snore. Heck, I don't even know if you breathe.
The soft tissues just inside Oral's mouth wobbled around for a second.
Oral does not believe you do either. Oral does not sleep in the same manner as most others, so your occasional production of rhythmic nocturnal sound is not a problem. Oral finds it somewhat soothing, in fact.
First time I've heard it described as soothing. Corin blushed, then stood and patted the Twi'lek on the arm. I don't think you can describe anything about your roommate as soothing, my friend.
Nawara's red eyes darkened slightly.
Since I won't be fighting with Jace for mirror space to preen, I think our conflicts will be minimal. I shall take solace in that fact. Rosati, on the other hand, will have more trouble with the other Fyfaran.
Why? You think I'm going to worry about my looks to impress the lot of you? No chance.
Rosati folded her arms across her chest.
I'm going to be spending my time becoming the best pilot there is in this squadron. So romance is not high on my list of priorities.
Corin smiled.
Besides, you don't need to work to be beautiful, Riss. Sure. Just you remember that when I turn your X-Wing into slag.
Oh, I hope you would not do that, Mistress Ina.
A plaintive tone warbled through M'Tray's words and his arms flailed.
The forms I would have to fill out. The court-martial and requisition for new parts. Oh, the work would be endless.
Easy, M'Tray. I was joking.
Ah. Oh, yes. Of course you were.
The black droid's arm settled back down to his sides.
If you have no further need of me, I will find this Whistler of yours, Mr. Horn, and see what I can do to learn more about the fate of your friend.
Thank you, M'Tray.
Corin suppressed a smile as the droid turned about with tiny steps, then headed for the door.
Nawara, did you have to deal with protocol droids in court?
The tips of the Twi'lek's head tails were coiled.
They functioned as paralegals, but none were allowed into court without restraining bolts. A judge once threw a gavel at one.
Not your droid, I take it.
No. I was not a welcome sight in Imperial courts, so any droid I could have afforded would not have been allowed in.
Rosati frowned.
But then there was no chance that the defense you offered your clients would be as strong as it should have been. That's not just.
Law and justice are seldom served at the same time.
Nawara shrugged.
The quest for justice has brought us all to the Alliance, has it not? Riss, you want justice for the dislocation of your family when the Empire made them free Bespin. I am looking for the justice I could not get for my clients. Corin wants the justice denied to innocent people oppressed by Imperial officials.
Nawara stopped and turned toward the Gand.
And you, my friend, what is the justice you seek?
Oral's armored lids closed for a second over his multifaceted eyes.
Oral does not believe you would fully understand what it is Oral seeks. The acceptance Oral has known here is indeed a welcome relief from the prejudice of the Empire. This shall suffice as Oral's justice.
A noble quest indeed, Oral,
Nawara assured him. Corin led the quartet from the briefing room. Their route to their new homes took them out of the main complex through a tunnel to a smaller warren of rooms and suites. The rebel base had once been an extensive mine complex on Commoner's largest moon, Folor. The Commoner system had been chosen because of the high level of shipping traffic that passed through it, and because of its proximity to Corellia and the Core Worlds. Corin let his right hand trail over the smooth surface of the tunnel walls.
Are we really after justice, Nawara? Or do we really want revenge?
Or is this a case, Corin, where revenge and justice are two aspects of the same thing? We are all committed to seeing the Empire brought down. The Emperor's death advanced our cause, but not enough to bring the conflict to the conclusion we want. 3 in 10 worlds are in open rebellion, and perhaps another 20% are nominally supportive of our fight. but half the worlds are still firmly allied against us. When the Emperor dissolved the Senate, he gave the Morphs control over their provinces. While I do not believe Palpatine saw that action as a hedge against disaster, that is, in effect, what it has become.
I know. If not for some of the Morphs playing power games against each other, we'd be hard-pressed to keep from being driven away from the core. The Corellian frowned. Then again, with Vader and the Emperor dead, and the Death Stars destroyed, I wonder if the Rebellion hasn't lost some of its fire. I agree with that. Rosati moved to the front of the quartet, then turned to walk backward down the hallway and face them. Vader was a symbol, just like the Emperor, and when they died, the relief was palpable. I think a lot of folks believe the whole Rebellion was won there. I'm taking the revitalization of Rogue Squadron as a sign that at least Commander Antilles and Admiral Akbar don't share that belief. The Twi'lek looped one of his brain tails back over his left shoulder.
By defeating the Emperor at Endor, the Rebellion proved itself a legitimate power in the galaxy. Within a month after Endor, the Alliance's Provisional Council issued their declaration of a new republic. The Rebellion became a government, albeit one with very little in terms of real assets, and it presented an alternative to the Empire. Worlds joining the New Republic are doing so on their own terms, and those negotiations are far from joyous things. Destroying the Emperor did bring a lot of nations into the fold, but primarily those who felt most oppressed or most threatened.
Corin thought for a moment. What you're saying is that the victory at Endor transformed a military insurgency into a political entity.
Not exactly, but close. Politics was always part of the Rebellion, but it remained largely dormant while the war was being fought. With the death of the Emperor, it became more important, because it allowed the Rebellion to bring in more worlds without having to resort to military conquest.
Nowara pointed vaguely back behind them with a taloned finger.
Commander Antilles' victory tour shows how important politics was, and is, to the Rebellion. A key military leader was taken out of service and forced into diplomatic duty.
And there are all the stories about Luke Skywalker and the possibility of re-establishing the Jedi Knights.
Rosati smiled.
Even though the Jedi had been wiped out by the time I was born, my grandmother used to tell me stories about them, and the Clone Wars.
My grandfather fought in the Clone Wars.
The Twi'lek stared at Corin.
Your grandfather was a Jedi?
No, just an officer with Corsec, like my father and me. He knew some Jedi Knights, and fought alongside them in a couple of actions near Corellia, but he wasn't one. His best friend was, and died in the wars. But Grandpa never talked about those times very much.
Corin glanced down.
When Vader started hunting down all the Jedi, Corsec resources were used to find them. And my grandfather didn't like that at all.
The sort of resentment such Imperial action engendered among the people is precisely the means by which the Alliance is able to bring worlds in to join it. Princess Organa and the host of diplomats working for the Alliance have done more to strengthen the New Republic than the whole Katana fleet could do, if that legend were true and we had control of it. Even so, there is a limit to what the diplomats can do.
Hence the reconstitution of Rogue Squadron.
I think so, Corin.
Rosati frowned.
What am I missing?
Corin jerked his head toward Nowara.
He's saying that the diplomats have pretty much mined all the ore they can find. The worlds who want to join us have. Those who don't, haven't. And those who aren't sure will need some convincing. Thyfera, for example, is the source of 95% of the Bacta in the galaxy. They're neutral right now, and making grand profits selling to all sides. But we want them in our camp. Putting two of their people in Rogue Squadron sends a message to the Thiferans that we value them. The same goes for having the Bothan in the squadron.
And the unit is commanded by a Corellian, and has another Corellian pilot in it.
Nowara tapped himself on the chest.
I'm either a token Twi'lek or a token lawyer.
Rosati laughed.
I'm a token refugee, I guess.
Oral snapped a trio of fingers against his billet data card.
Oral is token Gand.
So if this unit is a symbol that's filled with symbols, the supposition is that we have to do something very symbolic to get more worlds to join the New Republic.
Corin smiled.
As long as that means I get to bring justice to a bunch of Imperial pilots, I'm all for it.
Well, I think you'll have that opportunity, Corin.
The Twi'lek's rosy eyes darkened to the color of dried blood.
I'd guess Rogue Squadron will have the greatest of that sort of opportunity.
You think you know what target will be coming up next, Nowara?
It's only logical, Corin.
Both of the Twi'lek's head tails twitched in tandem.
Before too long, we'll be going after the biggest symbol of all. Let's hope they train us very well, because Rogue Squadron is bound to be the tip of the spear the Alliance stabs into the heart of the Empire.
A chill ran down Corin's spine.
Coruscant?
The sooner it falls, the sooner the Empire falls apart.
I never wanted to go to Coruscant.
The Corellian pilot smiled.
But if I have to go, doing it in the cockpit of a Rebel X-Wing will make the visit just that much more memorable.
Seven. Wedge Antilles killed his proud smile as he began his walking inspection of his X-Wing. He brushed his fingers along the underside of its smooth nose cone. Newly refinished. Good. He emphasized this judgment with a firm nod of his head, so those who could not hear him could determine what he was saying and thinking. Throughout the cavernous hangar, the pace of work had slowed as he came to inspect his ship. His squadron had already cleared the area and waited for him on the dark side of Folor, leaving him alone with the technical staff. Aside from his X-Wing, three other X-Wings being worked on, and a scattering of other broken-down fighters, there was little to occupy the attention of the crews. While they made a show of rolling up cables and sorting tools, they watched him and his reaction to their work. He continued on around to the starboard side of the craft, noticing how clean the crew had gotten the proton torpedo alleys. Another nod. The background hum of conversation picked up in volume and speed, but Wedge ignored it and continued his walk around. He could have cited dozens of reasons for doing a pre-flight inspection of his fighter, and all of them would have been good and right and militarily proper. The starfighter had seen him through 7 years of pitched battles with a minimal amount of failure. The inspection allowed him to spot anything that might be trouble before he got out into space, and that would save him a long, cold wait for a rescue crew. More importantly than that, his taking a tour around his ship set a good example for the rest of Rogue Squadron. He wanted to fight the belief that because they were elite pilots, they were above the mundane sort of duties all other pilots had to endure. Most of his people weren't like that, but he didn't want laziness by one person to slowly spread to the rest of the squadron. While they weren't there to see him, he knew news of his inspection would get back to them. And if I do this right, they'll be sorry they missed the show. He paused for a moment and looked at the rows of TIE fighters, bombers, and interceptors painted on the side of the ship. Big Death Stars bracketed the collection of smaller ships on either side, and Sea Ruck fighters had started a new row,
right at the top of the red stripe, bisecting the fuselage.
It has been a long fight, and will be longer still.
Behind him, Wedge heard some chittering that M. Trey translated.
Master Thry apologizes for not being able to fit all your kills in the space allotted. The ships rendered in red are meant to represent a squadron worth of kills, meaning a dozen.
Wedge frowned as he turned to face the droid.
I have a vague idea how many ships there are in a squadron, you know.
Yes, of course, sir. I know that. But given that the Verpi normally count in base 6, and humans use base 10, 12, which to a Verpi is known as 4 fists, the potential for confusion warranted explanation.
The human held his hands up in surrender.
Fine, just tell him that he can group kills by dozens or gross lots. It makes no difference to me.
Gross lots, sir?
A dozen, M-Trey.
144? 4 wings?
Yes, 48 fists in Verpine.
M-Trey looked from Wedge to the brown insectoid trailing behind them.
Sir, if I knew you were fluent in Verpine...
Enough, Trey. I'm not fluent in Verpine, but I have a head for figures. Let me finish this inspection.
Wedge took in a deep breath and slowly let it out again.
I'm gonna have to talk to Luke and find out how he puts up with his 3PO unit. Wait. That won't work. I don't have a sister around here to foist the droid off on.
He walked back to the starboard engines and inspected the cooling vanes and what little of the centrifugal debris extractor he could find. After looking over the engines, he examined the lenses for the deflector shield projectors and saw new ones had been installed. Shields gave the X-Wing its major advantage over TIE fighters and contributed to the X-Wing's reputation for being able to take a lot of damage before it went down. Even though the lasers were being powered down for training exercises, seeing the deflector shield equipment in good repair pleased him. He paid very careful attention to the twin laser cannons mounted on the ends of the ship's stabilizer foils. He pulled down on the bottom one and felt a slight shift before the unpowered actuator prohibited movement. That was good. More play than a couple of centimeters meant the lasers might shift out of alignment during use.
M-Trey, ask Sry what range he zeroed these lasers at.
A click buzz exchange took place between the tech and droid.
He says he zeroed them at 250 meters, Commander.
Good.
When they had flown against the Death Star, the X-Wings had been reconfigured so their zero, the point where the four beams converged, was nearly half a kilometer. That allowed them to be employed very effectively in knocking out stationary ground targets. In space combat, where ranges shrank and targets moved quite a bit, keeping the focal point closer increased the chances of scoring lethal hits on the enemy. While the lasers could still hit another fighter at a range of more than a kilometer, the lasers were at their most powerful at the close ranges common in dogfights. The cannon's barrels, flashback suppressors, gate couplers, and lasing tips seemed in good shape. Ducking beneath the cannons, he swung around to the aft of the X-Wing. Power couplings, deflector generators, exhaust ports, and power cell indicators all seemed in order. The inspection of the port S-foils and cannons showed them to be in good repair. His inspection ended with his return to the nose of the craft. He bowed his head to the Verpine tech.
Looks as good as new, if not better.
M-Trey translated, and the Verpine started buzzing. Wedge couldn't figure out what was being said, but the friendly pat on the arm by the insect man told Wedge the enthusiasm he heard was positive.
M-Trey, what did you tell him?
I told him that you think this ship is superior to what it was in its pre-moat stage. That is high praise. He is saying that he has a passion for restoring antiques like this, and has taken the liberty to make minor adjustments that will enhance performance.
Oh, wonderful.
Wedge smiled and kept his tone light. The Verpine, with their fascination for technology, and with eyesight that allows them to spot microscopic details, like stress fractures, without magnifying equipment, made for some of the best tech support in the galaxy. They were also known, however, for tinkering with the ships for which they cared. Wedge had never had a problem in that regard, but stories abounded about ships where the controls had been reconfigured into what a Verpine found would be a much better alignment. Not realizing most pilots did not have microscopic vision or didn't think in base six. Continuing to smile, Wedge mounted the ladder and assistant tech ran up against the side of the X-Wing. Poised on the edge of the cockpit, the pilot looked at his astromech. He didn't recognize it beyond realizing it was one of the flowerpot-topped R5 droids. Though the R5 was a newer model astromech droid, Wedge actually preferred the dome-topped R2 astromech droids, like the one Luke used, because of the lower target profile they offered an enemy. Then again, if they're close enough to hit you, you'll take the shots before they hit the cockpit, won't you? The droid's panicked hooting brought a smile to his face. Don't worry. Shooting's not going to start yet. Wedge dropped into the pilot's seat and got a pleasant surprise. One of Zrai's improvements had been a refurbishing of the padding in his ejection seat. This will make those long hyperspace jumps more comfortable. He strapped himself in, then brought his systems up. All the monitors and indicators came to life, as expected. Weapons are green and go. The R5 unit reported all navigation and flight systems were working, so Wedge pulled on his helmet and keyed his comm unit. This is Rogue Leader, requesting departure clearance from Folor Traffic Control.
Rogue One is clear for departure. Have a good flight, Commander.
Thank you, Control. With the flick of a switch, he cut in his repulsor lift generators and feathered the throttle so his fighter rose from the hangar deck in a deliberate and firm manner. Using the rudder pedals to keep the lift generators in tandem, he killed roll and yawing. He wanted there to be no doubt in the minds of anyone in the hangar that this was a steady, strong hand on the controls. His performance, he knew.